Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders on this Monday evening. Ryan Porth here with Willie Donick from Vancouver as the Predators get ready to take on the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow evening to end a four-game road trip in what has been an unusual road trip, going from Detroit to Colorado to San Jose and now north of the border to Vancouver after the Preds fall 2-1 in a shootout to the San Jose Sharks Saturday night. Willie, how's the road treating you here in the last 8 to 10 days?
Well, it's been very interesting. This is a pattern of cities that I'm not sure the team has ever gone to, at least that I can remember, in this kind of order. Three different time zones, none of which are in the Central. Pretty drawn out. And so when you're out on the road for 11 days or so, you figure there's going to be an extra game in there. So there's been some space between the games, and hopefully that space will bode well for the Predators in this last stop in Vancouver.
Well, let's get to Saturday night's game, a 2-1 shootout loss on the road in San Jose. Thought it was a well-played game for both teams. I thought there was a lot of great goaltending between Martin Jones and UC Saros, and the Sharks come out on top in the skills competition, I guess you could say, by a final score of 2-1.
Yeah, I thought the Predators made big strides with their overall defensive game. I think if there's one thing you could point to, the biggest issue for the season for Nashville has been having some of those lapses defensively that have cost them, and goals have really come in bunches against. They've had some letdowns that have taken them right out of games, and they avoided that on Saturday night in the Shark Tank. I thought they played very well defensively, didn't give up a lot of odd man rushes. UC Saros was very, very good in goal, and unfortunately, they picked a night where they weren't able to really get much going offensively. But I think that was sort of bound to happen. It's really hard to average four goals a game. It's not going to be easy to do. And the interesting part was that San Jose had all kinds of trouble stopping people. So that was not the team I would pick to have a little bit of an offensive drought. But that's the way it went. That's hockey. I mean, you take a look at the other night. You know, the Red Wings looked completely hapless the last week or so, and then they've turned around and they beat Vegas, and they beat somebody else really good. I think they beat the Bruins, too. So it's just like there's some strange things that happen in the NHL from night to night.
Well, it was definitely strange Thursday night in Denver, 9-4 win for the Avalanche over the Preds. We will get to that game here in a little bit. But the response, I thought, was key because all the quotes coming out of the locker room after that loss, that 9-4 loss, was basically, to paraphrase, we got embarrassed. We have to have a response. And at least defensively, that response was really good. And I got to say, Willie, UC Saros in his last three starts has been really good. 946 save percentage. You look at the overall numbers this year, the record doesn't look good. The peripheral numbers don't look good. But in his last three starts, UC Saros has definitely been better than, let's say, his first three starts.
Oh, no question about it. And I'm not the least bit worried about UC Saros so over the long term. I think the numbers will be there at the end of the season. And he looked very good the other night against the Sharks. That was a big positive. And I think the other positive in terms of the response bouncing back from the nightmare in Colorado was just the overall compete level and attention to detail. I think they just weren't ready. They weren't locked in mentally for that game in Colorado. Maybe they were caught off guard. A team that hadn't been winning, and you know, you look at their lineup and you see, hey, they're missing Rantanen, they're missing Landeskog, they don't have their goalie. Oh, and we just came off a game where we scored six. You know, maybe it was just one of those natural things where they fell into the mental trap, and hopefully they've learned from that, and hopefully they'll be ready to go again tomorrow night.
So I thought overtime was extremely entertaining, the 3-on-3 overtime, as it usually is, and I had a thought while watching that overtime, Willie, and that is, why doesn't the NHL ever extend this beyond 5 minutes? I would love to see the overtime period in the NHL in regular season maybe go to 10 minutes, maybe somewhere in between 5 and 10, maybe an 8-minute 3-on-3 overtime, whatever it may be. I just feel like a 5-minute 3-on-3 sometimes can leave something to be desired in terms of that. Like a game like that shouldn't be decided in a shootout. Give it more of an opportunity to end in overtime.
It's tempting, and I think the overall question you're asking has been addressed by the league in different ways. I think the league agrees with you that they would much rather see the game be decided in the 3-on-3 as opposed to the shootout. And the numbers have gotten better over the last couple of years. That's why they went from 4-on-4 to 3-on-3. Just not enough of the games were ending in overtime, because I think the shootout should be a last resort. They're trying to continue to tweak things to do that. I think the problem has happened. What you've seen is I think teams have gotten smarter of not letting it become a complete free-for-all in the overtime, where there's a little more structure, there's a little more strategy. Teams have learned how to try to break down the defense without maybe risking giving up a 2-on-1 or a breakaway going back the other way. So I think the teams have gotten smarter, which is maybe why a couple of these games have not been decided in the 3-on-3. The other point that I think was worth making is the Predators in these overtimes have three times now had a chance on the power play to put it away, and the power play has been a strength for them this year, but the 4-on-4, they have not been able to connect, which has, I know, been frustrating for them, because you feel like when you get the 4-on-3 in overtime, you should be able to, if you're not scoring, you should be all over them. And I don't think they've quite put the heat on the opposing team that they're looking for there.
It's almost like when they have those power play opportunities in overtime, and the one that you bring up was Evander Kane of the San Jose Sharks taking a hooking penalty with about 90 seconds left in overtime, and the Preds didn't really do much at all. And it almost feels like they're going through a feeling out process in overtime where the attitude maybe should be a little bit more urgent.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I agree with you that they have not been able to. I think you're 4-on-3, maybe you're looking for more of a high-quality shot and not just any shot. You certainly don't want to allow the other team to get the clear. You want to keep that possession going until you really get the good look. And it, for whatever reason, it just hasn't happened. They're not moving it as quickly, as crisply as they are in the 5-on-4. But hopefully that will work itself out over time. But that's where the missed opportunities have been in overtime, and they've had to settle for a point all three times that they've had the power play in overtime. Now, the first one was only, 19 or 29 seconds, something like that, against the Florida Panthers. But against the Flames and against the Sharks, they had a pretty drawn-out amount of time to make it happen on the 4-on-3. And it just didn't go.
Well, didn't they have one against the Lightning as well? And Ryan Ellis scored basically right at the tail end of it after the Lightning player came out of the box?
Yes. Yeah. So really, you're right. That's four that they've had. And they did score on that. And it was right as the guy was coming out of the box. I don't think he was. So it was a bit of a continuation when you get down to it.
Willie Donick here with me. Ryan Porth, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So the Preds get a point in the losing effort, 9-5-3. The Preds are now through 17 games this regular season. Tomorrow night, they wrap up the road trip in Vancouver. Willie, this team, despite the good record and despite getting a point Saturday night, they have now lost four of their last five games overall, two of those in overtime or shootout. What is kind of the message, or maybe the thing that this team needs to work on moving forward to try to get back in that win column to close out the road trip tomorrow night in Vancouver?
As I look at the team, I think they're very confident, despite the 1-2-2 record over the last five games. I think they're very confident that their top level is a very good level. I think that's something to be confident about. They're explosive. They can score goals in bunches. I think the focus is just going to be on continuing to iron out the little things, making sure they're making the right decisions with the puck, smart decisions. Don't get overconfident because you are explosive offensively, that you don't do the things that you need to do to separate yourself and play winning hockey. I think the overtime losses, I think you can, especially if it's a shootout loss, and One of the things is they haven't scored a shootout goal. Were they 0 for 10, I think, in the shootout? Mm-hmm. The two shootouts? And they gave up a goal in the overtime to Matthew Tkachuk. That's one of the greatest goals it might be the greatest goal in 3-on-3 overtime history. I think I could make that argument. I don't know if how far you want to go back, but that was an unbelievable once-in-a-lifetime kind of shot. So I think you can deal with the overtime losses and say, you did a lot of good things in those games, even though you settled for a point. What you've got to avoid is the big letdown like you had in Colorado. And so I'm hoping that will continue to play itself out. If you can play a strong game tomorrow against the Vancouver Canucks, you could come home potentially with a 2-1-1 road trip. You feel pretty good. On the other hand, if you can't get it done against the Canucks, you come home at 1-2-1, you don't feel as good about the road trip. So this is really kind of a pivotal game here because you have a chance to sort of regroup, travel home, and have a couple of days before you play again on Saturday night.
Coming up next, Philip Forsberg scored Saturday night. It was his third goal in as many games. We'll get to Philip Forsberg. Plus, how can the Preds get Mikael Granlund going here as we enter the second quarter of the NHL season? That's all coming up next. He's Willie Donick, the Preds TV voice and co-host of Darren, Donick, and Chase. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders on this Monday evening. Ryan Porth alongside Willie Donick, the Preds TV voice and co-host of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Weekdays 10-2, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. Those are Willie's good friends over there at Wyatt Johnson Ford, as well as Kerry Zire Remax Elite and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard, downtown Nashville. Willie, Saturday night, the Preds fall 2-1 in a shootout to the San Jose Sharks. But Philip Forsberg scored in the second period a beautiful goal, outworking Erik Karlsson to the puck, and just a power move around Karlsson, goes top shelf, and Philip Forsberg scoring in his third straight game. He now has 8 goals in 11 games, and I'm going to ask the question that we always ask about Philip Forsberg. Is he bound for 40?
I think if he stays healthy, I think that's the only thing. I think he's going to get the chances. If he gets the puck to bounce his way a little bit, we know he's going to get into that neighborhood. It's interesting. You talk to Peter Laviolette about numbers like that. He's not as concerned as maybe the fan mentality. It'd be great to see him hit that milestone from an individual standpoint. From the coaching standpoint, it's all about just the team production, driving the offense and putting pressure on the defense. The results should be there. I think that's one thing I sense from the coaching staff is guys are going to run hot and cold during the season, but if everybody's doing the right things on both ends of the ice, the numbers will come around for each person individually. Forsberg's got it rolling right now. Last year was Arvidsson's year in terms of everything going in. Other guys have off years, but Peter Laviolette's been around long enough to, and especially around this team long enough to know what he's looking for. The individual numbers will be there. Some guys will have a little bit better than years than others, but to answer your question, I just think Forsberg, he's sort of due, right? If he could just stay on the ice. And in this environment where they try to give the offense as much advantage as they can, even though these goalies are really good, I think it's the environment is more ripe for somebody like him to hit 40.
Well, Willie, you bring up the term driving offense, and that is so key in today's NHL for youthful players, whether it's defensively or offensively, to be driving offense. And Philip Forsberg has been the driver of a lot of the Preds' offense this season. You think back before the injury, his line with Matt Duchene and Mikael Granlund, that line was clicking on all cylinders. Now that Forsberg is back with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson here in the last few games, that line is now clicking. It just seems like whichever line Forsberg lands on, that is the line that is excelling the most offensively.
I think you can say that, no question. And I think the Johansson-Forsberg-Arvidsson line is looking pretty good. I'm waiting for them to have that dominant game where they just sort of take it and just blow everybody away, they can single-handedly sort of offensively win you a game. I think what the coaching staff is looking for is how do they balance it and get more production from whatever ends up being the other top scoring line. I think they're very happy with whatever happens on lines 3 and 4, but trying to get both lines balanced to where you have the best push from both has been the challenge so far.
Well, and to that end, Mikal Granlund, really ever since Philip Forsberg went down with that injury in Vegas and that trio with Forsberg, Duchesne, and Granlund was no longer a thing, Mikal Granlund's production has really dried up. 0 points in his last 12 games. He has 4 points in 17 games overall this season. How do the Preds try to get Granlund going here?
I think just be patient. And I think it's got to be frustrating for Mikhail, who has been an unbelievably productive player over the last 3, 4, 5 years of his career. He's got to be puzzled as to why the puck isn't going in. But I was looking at some numbers on him, and I started saying, okay, is he getting chances? Is he doing good things that are helping the team win? And the answer is absolutely yes. He has been, I think, what a lot of analytics people would tell you is a little bit unlucky. I was looking at Natural Stat Trick, for example. He has tied for the most individual scoring chances for at 34 on the season. He's first on the team in high danger chances with 14. So the shooting percentage that he's had, the puck's not going in for him. Maybe he's not finishing. Maybe the goalie is just making good saves at times. Also, the team shooting percentage when he's on the ice is the lowest on the team among the regular players. In other words, the puck's not going in on the ice for his team when he's out there. So there's some bad luck involved. He's doing other things that are going to help lead his team to wins. He's only committed one penalty. He's drawn 5. So he's put his team on the power play 5 times. He's only gone into the box once. He's third on the team in shots on goal. The Corsi, when he's on the ice, is 52%. The expected goals for 52%. So those are good numbers. These numbers would indicate that this is a productive player. So it's really puzzling how he can go through that much of a dry spell, not only this year, but you go back to last year after he was acquired. So those numbers give me a lot of hope that it will come around. But I know it's got to be frustrating to him and probably for the fans who are saying, okay, this guy's put up a lot of numbers. Why isn't it going in for him? Sometimes it's hard to explain. But I was very encouraged when I was looking at that stuff.
So Granlund, what you were kind of comparing to back in Minnesota, back when he spent his first 7 seasons with the Minnesota Wild, Mikal Granlund had a shooting percentage of 10%. And now with the Preds, it's not even half that. It's 4.6% in his 33 games in a Preds uniform. And in those 33 games, Granlund only has 9 points. It has been a little bit of a head-scratcher because whenever the Preds played Minnesota, you knew Granlund was a factor. Whenever you turned on and watched the Minnesota Wild with him on the ice, you knew he was making an impact. And those stats that you threw out there, yes, he is making a bigger impact than the numbers show, but I think Preds fans would like to see a little bit more impact and then obviously some of that luck to go his way so that he's not producing just 4 points in 17 games.
Well, obviously, if the Predator fans want him to do better, you know that he wants to do better. You know his teammates do. But all you can do is come in and you ask anybody. He works extremely hard each and every night. It's not a question of effort. He is a very sound defensive player, so he helps you win when he's not scoring. There's no question. It's one of the biggest mysteries on the team. But all you can do is get the chances, get the shots. Eventually, it will go in. I believe in the law of averages. So I do think that there's a breakout coming if he keeps doing. If these numbers stay the same, it's just a matter of time before results. Now, the interesting thing to me is, in the meantime, where to play him. Because they've moved him, right? They moved him to more of a checking line. He's getting huge assignments against the other team's top players, and he's been playing with Colton Sissons and Austin Watson. As we speak, the team is getting ready to practice here, so we'll see if they change anything around, because I think they continue to try to figure out what is the ideal place for all of these pieces. For example, Matt Duchene, the last couple of games, has been playing on the wing, and Kyle Turris has been playing center. Well, Matt Duchene is not a natural winger. He's a natural center. But somebody's got to play a little bit out of position. It's like Craig Smith playing on – they tried him on the left wing side. He just wasn't a fit there, so they put him back on the right wing. And that line with Nick Bonino, Craig Smith, and Rocco Grimaldi has been outstanding. So there's a process that they're going through right now as to where to put the pieces.
Well, here's what I would do if I were head coach Peter Laviolette. I would go back to the top six trios that worked so well right before Philip Forsberg got hurt. And that would be having Kalle Yarncroke flanking Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson on the left wing, and then putting Philip Forsberg back with Matt Duchene and Mikael Granlund, almost to try to get Granlund going and try to get some offensive consistency, because they have had some great outputs, like the Detroit game, 6 goals, like the Calgary game, 5 goals. But weaved in there in these last 5 games, they've had the New York game where they only had 1 goal for, the San Jose game, only 1 goal for. And yes, they scored 4 in Colorado, but that game was such a cluster that I don't know how much you can really take away offensively from that game, because it was such a nightmare defensively. I would try to find some more consistency with those trios of Yarncroke, Johansson, Arvidsson, and Forsberg, Duchene, Granlund, that have proven in the first 17 games that they can work together.
But it's a balance between not only trying to be the best offensively, but what are the best defensive lines that you can have too. And that's part of the thinking with putting Granlund where he's been. Colton Sissons is obviously a guy that can score some goals. He can chip in. But also, when you have Nick Bonino's unit and Colton Sissons' unit together, you have two very defensive-minded lines you can rely on the road when you don't have the last matchup. And so I think that's where they're coming from with the line combinations they've been using. But knowing the coaching staff, I would not be surprised if you see a continued tinkering here as they move forward.
Coming up next, a couple takeaways from that Colorado game that we've referenced a couple times. This is the first Preds Insiders since that game. I have a couple takeaways that I want to get to, plus the NHL Global Series that the Preds are going to be a part of next fall. That should be a lot of fun, and we'll get into all of that coming up next. He's Willie Donick out in Vancouver. I'm Ryan Porth, and this is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show, Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth joined by Willie Donick in Vancouver this evening. Willie, of course, the TV voice of the Nashville Predators, also the co-host of Darren Donick and Chase. You can hear weekdays 10 to 2 on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Willie, this is the first show that we've had on Preds Insiders since the nightmare game in Colorado, a 9-4 loss last Thursday. I don't want to relive it for too long, but I do have a couple takeaways that I wanted to bounce off of you before we move on to the Global Series, in which the Preds will be partaking in next calendar year. So I saw a lot of people on Twitter say that was perhaps the worst period that they've ever seen the Preds play. Of course, we're talking about the second period where the Preds gave up 6 goals. I would argue the first period of Game 4 in Dallas was a worse showing, considering it was the Stanley Cup playoffs, Game 4, and they went down 4-0 before you could blink in that game. So that's takeaway number one. And takeaway number two for me is I found it maybe a little confusing. Peter Laviolette has been so good over the years, even in previous stops, before coming to Nashville. He's been so good at using the timeout at the right time. And I was maybe a little confused, Willie, as to why he waited until it was 8-3 to take the timeout after he'd already pulled Pekka and put in UC Saros. I know it was almost like an avalanche of goals, pun intended. But I was a little confused why he waited so long to use that timeout.
I think when you change goalies, it is like a timeout. You basically can get everybody over there for a few minutes, try to regroup. I think it's a way of stopping the momentum when you do that. So I think in his mind, that was a timeout of sorts. And then, of course, it didn't get any better right after that. And that's when he resorted to actually using the timeout. It all happened so fast. That's something you just so rarely see. I don't think anybody could have foreseen what was going to happen there. And what was crazy was, you know, they scored a couple goals early in that period to take the lead. They had really struggled in the first period. And I thought we're fortunate to be down only 2-1. And then, boom, they score twice and you have the lead. And I think that it was a little bit of overconfidence, I think, at that point. I think there was a little bit of, we're okay now. And they relaxed. And that's when Colorado took it to another level. And they just let their guard down. So all you can do is learn from it. This is a veteran team. This is a team that the nucleus has been together a long time. They've been through almost every situation that you can be through together. It's not like there's a bunch of 21-year-olds trying to learn how to win in the NHL. So they've moved on. You know, that hasn't lingered. I thought they responded well. I think the challenge is, okay, they played a good game for the most part on Saturday in a tough building against the Sharks, a team that's desperate to try to get back in the race, but a team that's got a lot of talent. The key is, you know, they need to get on a stretch here where they have that compete level, that attention to detail, you know, for several weeks in a row, right? Try not to have that big letdown. Everybody's going to have letdowns in the course of a game somewhere. You're not going to dominate a team for 60 minutes. But you can't have a period where that kind of thing happens. That was extreme. But if you take a look, that's maybe the one thing you could say about this team. The game at L.A. early in the season, a couple of periods where they couldn't get anything going. At Arizona, who's turned out to be a pretty darn good team, by the way. The first couple periods in that game were mystifying, especially the first period. And the third period against Calgary, where they kind of lost it there. They allowed Calgary to get back in it. You know, that was one. So I don't know if I would call it a pattern, but it's happened a few too many times where you have the big letdown, where you give up, you know, goals in bunches and you let things slip away some. I think if they can kind of eliminate that, everything will take care of itself.
Well, and to that point, you just listed off basically all of the examples of them not having the compete level to the point in which they've had it in other games this season. And I feel like that has been fairly consistent throughout their games of having that compete level, even if the results aren't there. But to your point, there have been a handful of clunkers, and you don't want those clunkers as the season goes along. Last year, I thought there were way too many of them. It was just so inconsistent throughout the regular season, even though they ended up winning the Central Division. They were very well aided last year by a 13-3 start to win that Central Division. And this year, you just kind of want to your point, iron out that consistency and bring that compete level and be in every single game every night if you can.
Sure. That's every team in the NHL is trying to find that consistency every night. The other team does have something to do with it too. I mean, I think we have to give Colorado some credit for what happened on Thursday. It wasn't all that the Predators didn't play well. That's a desperate team that dug down and found a way to play at an urgent level and a high level. Calgary made some great plays to come back. So it's not all, you know, the Predators took the foot off the gas. They don't control everything in the universe. So both teams are competing, playing well, and getting paid. So this is life in the NHL. So you got to look macro here. I really like the materials here. Now, what happened last year, as much as anything else, was the long patch where they had a lot of injuries, which affected them greatly. If you took out the stretch where they did not have Arvidsson, Forsberg, Subban, and for a large chunk of that time, Turris, the record looks pretty darn good. It's a lot closer to the team that had 100 and however many points they had for the President's Trophy. So, yeah, the 13-3 start was one thing. But if you look at the patch of time last year where they dropped a level, it was really the time where the guys were hurt. It may not have looked as clean or as exciting, as dominant, but the results were pretty good last year when you get down to it. But that being said, I like the vibe of this team a lot. I like the ability to dominate that they have shown, and I think that's probably something that you like to know that you have, is when you're clicking, your top level is probably better than just about anybody in the league.
Yeah, and I think what I meant by that is the clunkers. There were a lot of clunkers last year, especially in maybe the second half of the season, where, yes, they would have a win or maybe two or three straight wins, and then they would just fall flat on their face against Vegas out in Vegas or at home against Colorado. There were just a lot of those games that left a bad taste in your mouth, where there can be losses where they're easier to maybe look past if you're in the media or if you're a fan of, okay, they played well, they didn't get the win, but you move on to the next game. There weren't a whole lot of those games. Late last regular season, a whole lot of clunkers. There's another one in Winnipeg where it, you know, the wheels just fell off, but that is last season, and the Preds are now in this season. And tomorrow night, the Preds close out their road trip in Vancouver, pregame at 8, puck drop at 9. All the action heard on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie, we talked about last season and this season. Next season, the Nashville Predators are going to be playing overseas across the pond. They're going to open the season in Prague, Czech Republic, against the Boston Bruins. And right before that, they're going to complete their training camp in Switzerland and play SC Bern. A really cool announcement that came out Friday as the Lightning and Sabres were playing over in Sweden. Really cool that the Preds are going to be a part of this next season.
That was one of the first things that I heard from the players, is not even the excitement. I mean, imagine the excitement for Roman Josi and Yannick Weber, who grew up in that town of Bern, Switzerland, you know, just 5 minutes from where they're going to play that game. How exciting that is for them. But the bigger thing that came out was just that, hey, the NHL wants us to be in the featured games. That was a feeling of pride that I heard from the players in the locker room in San Jose when that news came out. They were really excited that the league wants to showcase them in these big games. So that's gonna be a lot of fun. That is something that that I know they're really looking forward to. Right now, they don't have a player from the Czech Republic, and I know that part of the thinking there is that the Bruins have some excellent Czech players, and so that's what that's going to be an interesting game. I think the Predators are designated as the home team in that game, but I would imagine the crowd is going to be pretty heavy on the Bruins, rooting for them with the guys they have from that country there, unless the Predators make a few trades and bring some guys in there.
Well, maybe they can trade for someone like David Pastrnak or David Krejci and kind of even that out next October when that game happens.
Yeah, I'm not foreseeing the Bruins giving up on those guys. Those
I don't
guys
think
are
so
pretty
either.
Good.
Yeah,
but that's going to be a blast, though. It's going to be great stuff.
And what I'm interested in seeing is how much gold travels over there to Prague and Switzerland. And you know, I know that when the Titans went over to London and played the LA Chargers last football season, there were a pretty fair amount of Titans fans. But we all know gold travels. And the gold pops, and I am really looking forward to seeing how much gold is over there in Czech Republic.
We have seen, and Ryan, you know this, so we've talked about this many times, is over the years, especially the last 2, 3, 4 years, the increase in Predator fans traveling on the road to the various stops. Tomorrow, when they play Vancouver, it's a long way from Nashville, and it's not a Saturday night game. But when you take into account, you'll have some people that come out for these games. Also, there's a lot of Predator players that have ties to this area, a bunch. So Dante Fabro, for example, playing his first game in Vancouver, he grew up here. He said he's got close to 100 people that are going to come to the game. So you're going to see a lot of gold jerseys in the stands. And I think, you know, especially for the exhibition game in Switzerland, you're going to see a ton of Roman Josi fans that are going to represent, that have been watching and loving watching the Predators play for a long time. But yeah, I'm also curious, like you, Ryan, to see how many fans make the trip over there, you know, make it a vacation, watch, see some great places maybe that they've never seen before, and watch the Predators play. I think we know that the showing in Dallas for the Winter Classic is going to be overwhelming. I can't wait to see how many Predator fans go down there.
Well, I think that's going to be in the neighborhood of 25, 30,000 down there in Dallas, which is just going to be a sight to see.
I think that's a conservative estimate, I would say. We'll see if it even gets higher than that as people try to figure out how to work their way into getting some tickets. But that will certainly take care of itself.
Well, I know when the Preds released the jerseys on the Saturday matinee game, I could sense maybe a little bit more anticipation and urgency from some people that don't already have their trip booked to Dallas or tickets bought. Once they saw the jersey and it felt a little bit more real in that moment, they were like, okay, I got to be there. I got to be there. This is the real deal. These jerseys look so awesome. And I think that kind of kicked up the anticipation a little bit.
No question about it. No question about it.
Coming up next, we'll get to this Preds Canucks game that will be taking place in Vancouver tomorrow evening. We'll get to that. Plus, ESPN.com came out with an interesting buy or sell feature on some first half successes or maybe disappointments. We'll get into that coming up next. He's Willie Donick. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in Preds Insiders this Monday edition. Ryan Porth alongside Willie Donick in Vancouver. The Preds take on the Canucks tomorrow evening, pregame at 8, puck drop at 9. All the action heard, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Before we get to that game, Willie, ESPN.com and their experts came out with a buy or sell feature late last week surrounding some first half surprises or disappointments early on in the NHL season. And I wanted to run a couple past you to see if you buy or sell some of these statements as made by ESPN.com. And the first one will center around a player that the Preds will see tomorrow night. Elias Pettersson will finish in the top 10 in scoring. Do you buy or sell that?
I'll buy it. I think he is. Now, there's going to be some competition when you talk about top 10. There's probably 40 guys that could end up in the top 10, but he is a special talent, no question. Vancouver's got some pretty good stuff going right now. He's got that creativity. Now, if you take a look at the highlights from the last couple of days, you'll see some pretty incredible goals. I saw Connor McDavid make an incredible play last night. He had 3 goals yesterday. You know, it's going to be tough to bump him off of there. But Pettersson is not that far behind. He's got some elite skill. His shot is very, very unique. He's also a great passer. It's a tough combination. So he's a guy that maybe in Nashville you're not as familiar with as you would be some of these other guys that pop in your head, like Kucherov, who's been around a little bit longer, McDavid, you know about. Pettersson's a little younger, but he's getting into that category.
The skill level overall from young NHL players, maybe 23 or 24 and under, is completely off the charts right now. And Pettersson is one of the leaders of that pack.
No question about it. It's been one of the biggest talking points of the league, is that the league is getting younger, and the players, the special players that are coming in the last 4 or 5 years, are going to be around for a long, long time. And so that younger audience, I think, is really taking to them the skill that they have. You know, the game is evolving, and there's that old school throng of fans that probably still miss the fact that there's not quite as much physicality, toughness, fighting, all of those things. But it's being substituted from just blazing speed and incredible skill to where you don't know exactly what you're going to see. But the creativity on the ice is really amazing right now.
The next buy or sell item from ESPN.com was the Sharks will be a lottery team. Basically saying the Sharks are going to miss the playoffs. We saw them Saturday night. Willie, do you buy or sell that?
I'm a little bit on the fence. I'm not writing them off yet, so I'm going to sell that for right now. They're not going to be – I guess anybody that doesn't make the playoffs technically is a lottery team, but I don't see them cratering. They've got too much skill. The problem is going to be the goaltending, I think. The key is going to be Martin Jones. But right now, they've got a couple of issues. Jones is the biggest one. Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson are not great defensive players. I thought that was one of their stronger games that I'd seen all year on Saturday from a defensive perspective. The other thing that I'm wondering about is you have a line right now that the Sharks are putting together with two 40-year-olds. You've got Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau. Can they be productive on the same line for the whole year? Joe Thornton, you put him on the power play, he's going to be productive. 5-on-5, I don't know. So they have some questions. They're not as deep as they were. But I just have a hard time thinking they're going to go from where they were in the Western Conference Final all the way down to the lottery in 1 year. Something tells me they're still going to be hanging around. It may not be, but they're definitely down a notch from where they were. No question about that.
Yeah, overall, the Pacific Division, I think, has been better than a lot of people expected this season. When you have teams like Vancouver and Arizona and Edmonton so far this season being kind of the darlings or the surprises of the first quarter.
Yes.
San Jose, I agree with you. I might be on the fence right now in terms of them making the playoffs, but I do think their days of being a Stanley Cup contender may be over.
I will agree with you on that. I think that's different than, you know, what we think of lottery, which means, you know, the roof's going to cave in and you're going to have a lot of ping pong balls. I think for the reasons you said, much more balance up and down the Pacific. I think you're not going to have to get 98 points to be in there. You know, there could be a lot of teams hovering around that 92, 93 mark. And that's where maybe I see them. I think they're definitely down a couple of pegs from where they've been, but still a competitive team with a lot of talent.
The next buy or sell item on ESPN.com was at age 37, Pekka Rinne will be a Vezina Trophy finalist. Willie, do you buy or sell that?
I'm a believer in Pekka Rinne. There's no question about that. It's early. But I think the one thing you can say right now, he doesn't look any different than he did last year. And the year before, of course, everything went right. He was the Vezina Trophy winner. I don't think he looks that far removed from that. He's in great shape. He works extremely hard to keep himself in the best physical shape you can be in. And that's the number one thing that goes into being productive at age 37. Is you have to work that much harder to stay in shape. And the other thing that probably doesn't get as much talk is the points that Chris Mason made a couple years ago, the adjustments that Pekka Rinne has made in his style to modernize his game some. UC Soros has something to do with this as well. He's learned some stuff from UC, how he was taught. I think that's made all the difference in the world for him. I don't think he has been so much more efficient. He's not expending as much energy as he did years ago. He's not relying on pure athleticism, which is going to depreciate a little bit as you get older. And so I think he's made the adjustment. It's like a pitcher, like a, you know, a Greg Maddux or somebody who's able to pitch well into their high 30s. You don't have the fastball anymore, but you learn how to pitch better. You're smarter. You're more efficient. And that's how you continue to be productive. I see some of that with Pekka.
So coming up tomorrow night, the Preds taking on the Vancouver Canucks. Again, pregame at 8, puck drop at 9. All the action on ESPN 102.5, The Game. And Willie, at practice today for the Nashville Predators, they did juggle the lines a little bit. Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Mikael Granlund on the first line. Calle Järnkrok, Matt Duchene, Victor Arvidsson on the second line. Looks like it would be Rocco Grimaldi, Nick Bonino, and Craig Smith. And then Austin Watson, Kyle Turris, and Colton Sissons. So an interesting look there at practice ahead of tomorrow night's game against the Canucks.
Very interesting. And you notice what is the one line that they keep together, Nick Bonino's line. Take a look at the numbers that they have put together, and you can see why they have not messed with that line at all. That line has been absolutely fantastic. So they continue to try to tinker the pieces around. This is something they haven't tried yet, putting Granlund up there with Johansson and Forsberg. So very intriguing. But the thing you give up possibly is now you put Kyle Turris down, who's an offensive-minded player, and you put him on a line where now you're looking to have that sneaky extra offensive line with him spearheading it, which has worked at times this year. So I like how the brain waves are working. You can see what they're trying to do there. How do we get the most out of each line on each particular night? And tomorrow is going to be a good test because this Vancouver team has played very, very well, but they have sagged a little bit lately. They've lost, what, I think three in a row. I watched their game yesterday against PK Subban and the Devils. The Devils got a couple early goals and hung on and won 2-1. So they're not scoring quite at the pace that they were earlier. But don't make any mistake about Vancouver. They're an explosive offensive team, and they've been surprisingly good defensively. And Travis Green, I think, has a lot to do with that. I think he has really worked hard over the long haul to try to teach the young players how to play the right way defensively, the 200-foot game, and I think he's starting to see the fruits of it now.
Yeah, the Canucks have actually lost four in a row, and they've only scored five goals in those four games. So kind of like Colorado last week, where they were struggling going in, you knew you were going to get their best effort. I think the Preds can expect the same tomorrow night from Vancouver as they look to get on track.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. It's an interesting theme of this road trip, where this is the third straight team that they're facing that in one way or another is probably feeling a little desperate and urgent for one, you know, because Colorado had the injuries. They had lost a bunch, five in a row. They had that desperate element. San Jose has dug a big, big hole. They needed to come out of it. They had recently lost five in a row, but they got their third straight win against the Predators. But you could tell there's desperateness. And now you've got Vancouver that it really jumped out and surprised everybody. Now they've had their first bump in the road, and I'm sure these last 48 hours are going to be, you know, let's get the nose back down to the grindstone and get back to doing the things that made them successful.
Willie Donick will be on the call on the TV side of things tomorrow night as the Nashville Predators take on the Vancouver Canucks. He is also the co-host of Darren Donick and Chase, weekdays 10 to 2, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie, thank you so much for joining me from Vancouver, and enjoy that beautiful city and have a good call tomorrow night.
Will do. Ryan, it's been a pleasure.
For Willie Donick, I'm Ryan Poore. Thank you so much for listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up at 8 o'clock, it is Slapshot Radio. But next on ESPN 102.5 The Game, it is the Rick Stockstill Show right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.